muttered and returned from whatever place his mind had gone to.
"Of course we may speak. Was I preventing you from speaking? If so, I apologize. It's been so long since I have spoken with someone that I may have forgotten the protocols. Or maybe they've changed. How are people talking these days?"
Thanos regarded him quietly for a moment.
"You're asking the wrong person."
The lore speaker nodded gently, considering.
"Well, let's see how this tastes."
Picking up both mugs, he held one out to Thanos, who accepted it. The tea was surprisingly sweet, with a buzzy sort of aftertaste.
"Good. Yes?"
The lore speaker seemed highly invested in the answer.
"Yes. Good."
Thanos sipped some more.
"Now, if we could move on to the purpose of my visit?"
"Of course. Perhaps I should explain first exactly how this all works."
With the word "this," the lore speaker pointed at his own head.
"The peculiar neurology of my brain is such that once I know something, I cannot forget it. But all of my information is recalled in the form of stories. Bards and tale-tellers and oracles throughout the universe are not particularly fond of me, needless to say, although I suppose my exile here has diminished their animus somewhat."
Thanos coughed impatiently. He had become unaccustomed to waiting for his turn to speak.
"Of course," the lore speaker said quickly, getting the hint. "My apologies. As I said, I don't get a lot of visitors. My small talk skills are rusty, at best."
"I never possessed them in the first place. Perhaps we should just skip ahead. I am seeking an artifact,"
Thanos told him.
"One of great power, rumored to be in the possession of the ruler of Asgard."
The lore speaker frowned, for the first time evincing an emotion that was not glee or satisfaction. His bluish whiskers trembled ever so slightly at the terminus of his downturned lips.
"Odin, you dabble with powers beyond your ken, Thanos. Very daring." "I have cause to be daring. I seek the Infinity Stone."
The lore speaker shrugged.
"Which one?"
An image of Cha-Ragor flickered momentarily, like a sudden sharp bite at the back of Thanos's brain.
"So there is more than one. I've heard Odin possesses one called the Aether."
The lore speaker made a sound that Thanos thought was a giggle, but which quickly turned into a cough.
"Your pardon,"
the lore speaker said, and drank some tea before continuing.
"Odin has many artifacts in his possession. There are stories of dwarven metal and hammers that only gods may lift, and a box that contains winter. Are you certain about the information you've received?"
"Truthfully, no. But I believe the Asgardians are hiding something,"
he explained, as briefly as possible, his time on the Golden Berth with his lordship and the information he'd gleaned from plundering the dead man's data. For good measure, he also explained what he'd learned from Vathlos. And then, because the natural next question would be, "Why didn't you follow up on that?" he recounted the assault on the base near Alfheim and the battle against Yrsa on board the Blood Edda. At the Asgardian's name, the lore speaker perked up, his lips twitching into a grin.
"Ah, Yrsa, I know that name, the goddess of combat and close quarters."
Suddenly, the battle on the Blood Edda all those years ago made much more sense.
"In any event,"
Thanos said, clearing his throat,
"I have ample reason to believe that Odin is in possession of this Aether."
The lore speaker's grin widened into a satisfied, delighted smile.
"There is a story I could tell you. Actually, more than one. One is about Odin and the dark elf Malekith. One is about the planet Earth. Another is about the planet Morag and the fate of that world. I'm not interested in stories, just information."
The lore speaker clucked his tongue and wagged a finger.
Tut-tut, Thanos. I've told you how my mind works. If I could simply produce information, I would. But I must tell you a story."
Folding his arms over his chest, Thanos leaned back in his chair.
"Very well, then. Regale me."
The lore speaker's lips quirked into something like a grimace. Something about it set off all Thanos' internal alarms. He tensed, his fingers curled into his palms. But it was just a moment, a tick, perhaps, a misfiring neuron. As quickly as the expression appeared, it faded into the lore speaker's more serious and relaxed mien.
Oh no, it's not that simple. You have to give me something first, Thanos. That is the price for my knowledge.
Thanos unclenched his fists and ran his hands down his flanks, proving the flatness of his garb.
I have nothing to give you. I came empty-handed.
The lore speaker shook his head.
Not something physical. I have no need for gifts. I want your story. I want a memory. Something true and deep. Don't try telling me what you ate for breakfast this morning. Although, honestly, I'd like to know. I can't help it. When you have a memory like mine, you thirst for knowledge.
I ate an omelet of Blood Eagle eggs with toast and blinkenberry jam,
Thanos told him.
We have a well-stocked larder aboard my vessel, with food stores from a multitude of vanquished worlds at our disposal. I'd be happy to offer you...
He broke off. The lore speaker wasn't listening. Instead, the man sat almost perfectly still, licking his lips, eyes closed. His eyes vibrated behind those lids, and Thanos imagined the biochemical processes at work, etching his prosaic breakfast into the permanent memory structures of the lore speaker's unfathomably complicated brain.
Good.
Great, said the lore speaker, opening his eyes and smiling brightly.
Now, you need to give me some important memory of yours, something significant. Make it a good one, Thanos, and I'll tell you everything you need to know about that thing old Bor took from the Dark Elves, which, I can tell you, isn't even actually on Asgard anymore.
He grinned slyly.
Interested?
Thanos was desperately interested, but he had no idea what sort of memory might satisfy the lore speaker's curiosity. He clenched his fists and thumped his knees lightly. To come so close. All his answers resided in the skull just a few decies away from him, and if there were a way to rip them right out, he would.
There's no rush, his host told him. Not for me, at least. Take your time. Think about it.
Thanos gave brief consideration to kidnapping the lore speaker up to Sanctuary, where Nebula and Gamora could perform the dull necessities of torture that would pry the requisite information out of the man's living brain. But, he reasoned, a brain as powerful, as complex, and as unutterably alien as the lore speaker's could potentially be resistant to the usual torments and inducements. It was a risk he couldn't take. Chapter 39. Within the confines of his mind, Thanos revisited his life, replaying the great battles, the wars, the decisions he'd made that had turned the tide of bloodshed to or against him, the triumphs, both close and foregone. None of them, he decided, would prove to be of exceptional interest to a being who had memorized the greatest wars and conflicts in the history of the known universe. Was it possible he'd actually achieved nothing of note? That in pursuit of greatness, he'd stumbled into mediocrity? Was Thanos not a savior, but rather just another warlord, traipsing around the galaxy taking what he wanted with no higher purpose? The lore speaker gestured broadly with his scepter.
Have I stumped you, Thanos?
Thanos grumbled noncommittally. The lore speaker asked him if he would like some food while he thought. Thanos considered this.
Where do you get fresh food? There's no life in the Kaldeen Soro.
I have a hydroponic garden under this building,
the lore speaker explained.
I can show it to you if you like.
Thanos had more questions, he realized. They would help him stall as he contemplated the lore speaker's demand for a story.
How do you stay here?
Thanos asked.
Alone, isolated in this one building, and not go insane.
Oh, but I do go insane.
The lore speaker's tone was bright, unaffected, honest.
It happens every few years. I just lose my mind for a little while.
And then?
He offered Thanos a wide, radiant smile.
And then I find it again.
How do you entertain yourself? How do you learn new things?
The lore speaker tapped his temple.
You forget. I don't forget. I remember everything I have ever seen or heard or learned. I have a near infinite array of information to pore over, to study. I am always looking for new connections and patterns. If I need entertainment, I need only recall any one of the nearly infinite stories I've been told.
He gazed at Thanos, licking his lips.
Speaking of stories, have you come up with one yet? I'm not trying to rush you, certainly not on my behalf. I'd be happy to have you stay as long as you like. But I sense you have a particular urgency.
Yes. I have a task that must be completed in the next 100 billion years.
The lore speaker did not chuckle or even smile at Thanos's attempt at humor. He merely nodded very seriously.
Well then, we should get started.
He could stall no longer.
I don't know what story to tell you,
Thanos admitted.
My life seems suddenly exceptional and banal all at once. I've been an outcast my entire life, by birth and social fiat at first, by my own choices and actions later. I have subscribed to the highest possible standards, believed only in the noblest causes, sacrificed everything, all to arrive here. And now, it seems pointless. My task is so enormous that I cannot encompass it, even in my own great intellect. It falls to me to save the universe from itself, and yet the universe seems to conspire against me.
When he was done, he half expected the lore speaker to laugh at him, to order him out of the domicile. Instead, the other simply gazed at him, hands clasped.
I see. Do you?
You believe you are charged to save the universe.
That's a big job. Who gave it to you? I gave it to myself. I saw what others could not, did not, would not.
There's more. Something you're not telling me.
With a sigh, Thanos recounted his recurring dream.
You cannot save everyone, the lore speaker murmured.
But I can save some.
Do you believe this dream is something more than merely a dream?
Thanos barked laughter that filled the lore speaker's home.
No, don't be absurd. This is simply my own mind reflected back at me, telling me what I need to know in direct language.
You began your life with the cards stacked against you, said the lore speaker. You were a monstrosity, a deviant, in a world that appreciated conformity and order. You learned an important lesson. Those who stand out, who excel, are beaten down by those who can neither stand out nor excel, using whatever excuses they can.
They were not all like that,
Thanos said, thinking of Gwynth and what she'd said to him.
We're not our parents. We don't hate and fear just because something is different.
And then he realized it. The memory he needed to give to the lore speaker. It was his and his alone, and it had nothing to do with war or death or blood. It was, he knew now, the moment that defined him, a moment of light and love.
I kissed a woman, he said slowly. A special woman.
The lore speaker perked up.
The warlord has a heart after all.
Go on.
It had been a long time ago. Several lifetimes, for all intents and purposes. At first, Thanos wasn't even sure he could remember the kiss with any sort of fidelity. He experienced a moment of horror when he realized he could not remember her face. It had been supplanted in his memory by the dream Gwynth, the decaying revenant who had haunted him since his exile. But it was just a moment. It passed, and he discovered that as soon as he leaned hard on one tile of memory, Other tiles surfaced around it. He remembered the walk through the cluttered, clotted streets of the Eternal City, surrounded by those who were now dead. Cinta, also dead, tugging him, obstinate and reluctant, into the silent Curium. And the girl. The girl with the close-cropped hair, bright red. Her pale yellow skin, sprayed with a freckling of light green. And her first shy smile, as she moved so he could sit with her. He would never forget her face again. He would not allow himself to. The drink he had drunk that night, green, bubbly, and too sweet, tasting of melon and elderberries and ethyl alcohol. He could taste it again on his tongue, even now, as though he'd just tippled it. All of this leading up to the kiss. The first kiss, when he'd come to understand his yearning for connection, his need to understand himself so he could hope to bond with others. That kiss, the first time he felt humane tenderness, a blending of people.
"I felt incomplete," he said to the lore speaker. "But with that kiss, I knew that if I pressed forward, if I became the person I needed to become, that I would capture the feeling I needed all along. That the kiss would then mean something. I knew it. I've been seeking it. If I can save the universe, then I will become the Thanos who was worthy of that kiss."
He still wore his battle armor, but he'd never felt so vulnerable in his life. Not even when bleeding and dying on the end of Yrsa's war axe. There was more to tell, if need be. How he had then found the courage to go at last to his mother. The shame and disappointment of that meeting. He had it all in him, and he could tell it all, no matter how much more vulnerable it would make him. It was worth it, if it led him to the power to save the universe. The lore speaker smiled a genuine smile of childlike glee.
"What a lovely little anecdote, Thanos. Thank you for that." "Is it enough?"
Thanos asked gruffly. He felt his limbs about him, his muscles, twitching. He was not a lovesick, lovelorn, love-torn, broken boy. He was a warlord, a conqueror. He had dredged up the memory and given it freely, but he would not let himself wallow in it. There were more important tasks ahead of him. The past could stay behind. With a slow nod, the lore speaker said,
"It will suffice." "Then tell me of the artifact. It's not that simple."
Thanos stood abruptly, pulling himself up to his full, intimidating height. He cracked his knuckles and hovered over the smaller man.
"I am not one for games, Lore Speaker. Don't misinterpret my fond memory of a bygone age as weakness. I have murdered worlds. One more gallon of blood on my hands will not disturb me in the slightest."
The Lore Speaker chuckled, absolutely unworried, and stood up, tapping his scepter against Thanos's chest.
"Thanos, Thanos, Thanos. We're friends. No need for threats. I'm going to tell you everything you need to know. I just need to do it as a story, you see? It's right there in my name, Lore Speaker."
He twirled his index finger around his ear.
"That's how my brain works, remember. It's not a loose collection of facts and figures up here. It's an interconnected skein of characters and notions and plots. Just be quick about it,"
Thanos said.
"I will edit on the fly as judiciously as I can,"
the lore speaker promised.
"We will call this story, The Parable of Morag. Are you ready?"
With a grumpy twist of his lips, Thanos flopped back onto the sofa, which groaned loudly in complaint.
"I suppose I have no choice." "Great!"
The lore speaker clapped his hands together and wrung them joyfully.
"Let's begin."
Chapter 40
The Parable of Morag. The world of Morag circled, still circles, actually,
the binary eclipsing M31V in the western spiral arm of the Andromeda Galaxy. There are a trillion stars in the Andromeda Galaxy, and so trillions more worlds. Yet this one has particular meaning for us and for our story. Morag today is not dead in the sense that the sorrow is dead. Life still thrives there in the form of vegetation, rodents, and a particularly dangerous species of amphibious predators. But intelligent life was wiped out millennia ago, owing in part to Morag's own hubris. For though Morag was a world of many technological wonders, the people of that flourishing civilization ignored the evidence of their science in favor of the evidence of their eyes. Told by data that their world was imperiled, they instead clung to the evidence before them, which told them that the weather was perhaps a bit colder this winter or hotter this summer, but surely nothing to worry about. They learned soon enough how wrong they were. The drastic temperature fluctuations brought about by global climate change melted the polar ice caps, and the planet was entirely flooded. No one survived. Except, as mentioned before, the Orloni rodents and the weird crocodile-like things that thrived in the water and so on. But before they died, the people of Morag built a great temple to hide and preserve their most powerful artifact, an Infinity Stone. Yes, an Infinity Stone! The people of Morag had been entrusted, or perhaps cursed, with the possession of this, one of the most potent and powerful artifacts in the entirety of the known universe.
If it's so powerful, why didn't they use it to save their world?
Hush, I'm getting there. The stone was powerful, true. But that was all it was. Powerful. It was, in fact, the power stone itself. Legend tells that it was a purple bauble which could enhance the bearer's physical abilities, imbuing him or her, or they, or it, or air, or purrs, or this, or zeer, with incredible power. The ability to manipulate energy. The strength to lift buildings. Power enough, when properly channeled, to obliterate entire worlds. But not, sadly enough, power to save. Power to protect. The power stone could only be used for violence and destruction. In the face of encroaching global catastrophe, it was useless. Yet the people of Morag knew that the Power Stone must be protected and preserved. They restrained its great power in an orb, then built around the orb an entire temple devoted to the housing and protection of the stone. Like the rest of the planet's civilization, the temple was consumed by the hungry, overfed waters of Morag. Yet, it is whispered that every 300 years, the waters recede enough to make the temple accessible, and that perhaps someone very brave, or very foolish, or very both, might be able to enter the temple and possess, at last, the lost legacy of the people of Morag. The Infinity Stone of Power.
Chapter 41.
I've never heard of such a thing,
Thanos said.
And I don't see how it could be of use to me. I already possess the power to lay waste to worlds.
Ah, but you must consider where the stone comes from, Thanos.
And that is?
Your wit is sharp, your mind strong, yet your education is lacking. Have you heard of the Celestials?
No.
The light of realization flashed in the lore speaker's eyes. He licked his lips and thrust a triumphant finger in the air, and... Chapter 42.
The Parable of the Universal Powers. In the wake of the universe's creation, there arose the Celestials, beings enormous in power, in stature, and in influence. They are to us as gods to ants, more powerful than even the mightiest guardians. Some say they were born in the heat of the Big Bang. Others, that they came into being billions of years later, predating the rise of intelligence and civilization throughout the universe. However they were born, they were the first of the great species to roam the stars, and they had the potential to wield the Infinity Stones. The stones were the remnants of a universe that preceded our own. Six singularities that survived the Big Bang and were forged by unimaginable beings into concentrated ingots. Each one had a characteristic tied to a specific aspect of the universe as a whole. Time, space, reality, mind, soul, and of course, power. As time passed and the young universe aged, the ingots came into the hands of beings of great powers, such as the Celestials and their kin. They were modified and tinkered with, until they were six great stones, each one capable of imbuing its wielder with almost limitless power within its specific domain. So powerful were the stones that no one could control them entirely. And as time wore on, the stones were lost, one by one, eventually passing into the realm of legend, then myth, and then outright forgotten. Today, few know what an Infinity Stone is, and even those who do don't necessarily believe they exist. But they do, Thanos. They do. Chapter 43. During the second parable, which seemed to be more about the stones than about the Celestials, but he said nothing on this score, Thanos had leaned forward, elbows on knees, his fingers steepled before his frowning visage, his brow furrowed with concentration. It was, of course, ridiculous, absurd. He dismissed the very idea of such things. They had no place in the rational universe as he understood it. They were a moron's fable, a bedtime story to recite to credulous children who could believe such things existed in the cosmos. But...
Six stones, he said slowly, as though contemplating the seriousness of it. One each to control different aspects of the universe.
Oh, yes, the lore speaker said excitedly. He gesticulated wildly with sudden passion. The Space Stone, for example, is blue. That's the one I believe Odin has had in his possession, though I have been told an interesting tale of how he came to send it to a place called Earth. A sort of cosmic backwater, really. Nothing worth noting, except that there may very well be an Infinity Stone in the midst of all the monkey men there. And then there's the Soul Stone. That one's orange, and I know for a fact where it is, and I will tell you the story now.
Don't bother.
The lore speaker's wounded expression almost, induced Thanos to change his mind. But he remained resolute. He had no more time for fairy tales. Still, the lore speaker prattled on, now twirling his scepter like a baton. He had broken out in a sudden sweat along his brow, and his words came almost too fast.
The Reality Stone was acquired by the Dark Elf Malekith during one of Svartalfheim's many wars with Asgard, and those, Thanos, are tales I shall regale you with shortly, for they are truly awesome. In any event, this is the ether of which you spoke, taken from the Dark Elves by Bor, father of Odin, who hid it far from any living being, for it was too powerful to entrust to anyone. So, no, I don't believe you would have found it, even if you'd been able to breach Asgard's defenses. The Time Stone was lost millennia ago, but resurfaced in Kamar-Taj, in the possession of the Ancient One. Put a pin in that, lots of stories to tell there. And the Mind Stone! Well, you wouldn't believe.
I don't want to believe any of it, Thanos interrupted forcefully. Rocks that predate the universe? That control the fundamental forces of reality?
Believe what you wish,
the lore speaker snapped, miffed.
The universe does not care what you do or don't believe.
That was beginning to sound suspiciously like Char's insistences. Thanos clenched his furrowed jaw.
If these stones exist, why are they not used more often?
The lore speaker offered a short bark of laughter without a hint of mirth. Something had changed. Something in the air itself.
They are hidden, Thanos,
the lore speaker said, as though badgering a child. Because they are too powerful.
And because the Celestials and the others, the ones whom the Celestials fear, keep close watch on the stones from afar. This is complete madness.
The lore speaker smiled indulgently.
Of course. Rise, Lord Thanos.
Thanos stood.
Are you trying to prove a point?
Why not hop on one foot?
Thanos grunted.
I am not here for your amusement, and yet you're amusing me.
Looking down, Thanos realized with sudden horror that he was, in fact, hopping up and down on one foot. His eyes darted to the lore speaker. As Thanos watched, helplessly hopping up and down, the lore speaker slowly unwound the strips of hide from the top of his scepter, revealing an ornate top quarter that split into two tines, one longer than the other, both curved. Nestled between them was a shining blue stone of some sort, vaguely egg-shaped. A stone. He riffled through his memory.
I thought the space stone was blue.
Thanos realized he no longer had control over his own limbs. He was still hopping up and down like a marionette, wielded by a puppeteer with too few fingers.
What?
The lore speaker asked absently, then glanced over at the scepter as though seeing it for the first time and giggled. It was a horrendous, haunting sound that chilled Thanos' blood.
Oh, no, no. This is merely a protective shell to keep the full measure of its power from.
He broke off.
Stop hopping, it's annoying me now.
Thanos came to rest on both feet. He fought mightily to move his arms, but could not. He was frozen in place.
It's the Mind Stone, Thanos,
the lore speaker intoned, leaning in, leering.
The Mind Stone.
Thanos's eyes were still under his control, and he shot a glance over at the Mind Stone, which glimmered in the light of the lore speaker's domicile. He couldn't imagine how such a thing could be possible, but he was living proof. The Infinity Stones were real.
How?
He asked. The lore speaker flapped his hands exasperatedly and began walking slowly around Thanos, occasionally touching an arm or his back. His demeanor had changed. No longer was he gentle and curious. Even his amusement was disturbing and intense.
Oh, the details would bore you, and I'm not sure of them. Anyway, I acquired the stone millennia ago. Before I could truly put it through its paces, my cousins ambushed me and trapped me on this godforsaken speck of space dust. Imagine it, Thanos, trapped on this mud ball with one of the most powerful artifacts in the history of the universe, and no one to use it on.
He screamed quite suddenly, bellowing to the ceiling and to the dead sky beyond. Then just as suddenly snapped back to fix his gaze on Thanos with a truly happy and satisfied grin.
Until you.
Fine. You have me.
Thanos' heart raced, but he worked to keep a tremble out of his voice.
Now what?
The lore speaker ignored him, standing back and pointing at Thanos with the tip of the scepter.
Your eyes. Do they always glow blue like that?
No.
I'm still figuring out exactly how to use it,
the lore speaker confessed.
You're my first test subject since my exile so many years ago. Truly, I can't even say how it would work in the hands of another. For me, with my brain already configured the way it is, it allows me to control you, to read you. But you know that, don't you?
Thanos felt compelled to answer every question, even the rhetorical ones.
Yes.
What does it feel like, Thanos?
The lore speaker whispered, coming in close.
Does it feel like
spiders eating your brains from the inside? Does it feel like a great churning wheel in your skull, grinding your free will to powder? I really want to know. It felt like both of those, and yet at the same time, it felt like a vast ocean of peace in which he could wallow. His independence and individuality were being overridden by the lore speaker and the mind stone. The psychic pain was tremendous. And yet he also felt warm and comforted at the same time. It felt as though he, the essential core, he, was being pulled from his own body and his own self to be replaced with something else. And at the same time, he welcomed it. The lore speaker leaned in closer, still whispering.
As I told you, Thanos, sometimes I lose my mind. It's different every time. And this is what it looks like this time.
He stepped away and withdrew a long, wicked knife from the folds of his robe.
And now the test!
With a blood-curdling blurt of laughter, he plunged the knife into Thanos' chest. Everything in Thanos' mind and body screamed to move, to dodge, to flinch, to crumple, to cower, to lash out, to strike back. A thousand different responses roared through him, every single one of them nullified by the control of the Mind Stone. He could only stand there as the blade struck him, as it rammed through his clothes, cut through his flesh, his muscle, blunted against his rib cage. He actually heard the sound of steel striking bone. Shunk! At the same moment that the vibration of it ran up his sternum, spread along his clavicle, and rattled his skull. The lore speaker released the handle, leaving the knife embedded there. He shut his eyes and took a long, deep, shuddering breath.
Oh, yes, yes. If you had even the slightest bit of free will left in you, you would have at least tried to avoid that. I think if I pushed the stone just the tiniest bit, you would lose all sense of yourself in an instant.
He smiled.
But I must confess, Thanos, I like the idea of it taking time. I like the idea of you suffering as every last bit of you slips away.
You're truly insane.
That's what my cousin said,
the lore speaker responded, dreamily, eyes still closed. He tittered at the memory.
Cousins, cousins. Stupid, stupid cousins. Two of them teamed up to strand me in this forsaken place. They wanted the stone for themselves, but didn't dare get close enough to take it, so we stalemated.
He drifted off and sighed in discontent.
Well, enough about that. They thought I would die here, and I didn't. Haven't.
He opened his eyes and grinned, baring his teeth, his voice gone creepily sing-song.
Won't. Thanks to you, Thanos, my savior.
The nerves where the knife had struck Thanos had gone into shock at the moment of impact, but now were awake and screaming. He could only grit his teeth. He'd suffered worse. This pain was nothing compared with that visited upon him by Yrsa, for example. But the inability to move made it nearly unbearable. He was completely helpless for the first time in his life.
I've had time to do nothing but plan,
the lore speaker went on.
And now that you're here, Oh, is that knife bothering you? Take it out.
Unbidden by his own mind, Thanos' hand reached up and pulled out the knife. It dripped with his blood. A river ran down his chest and fell in fat droplets on the floor.
I can't have you dead, not yet, but you're a hardy sort, aren't you? Big and strong and tough and unapologetic about it. Good. True strength neither needs nor makes excuses. You're going to need to be strong. It's going to be a long, painful process by which I figure out how to transfer my consciousness into your body.
Thanos managed to keep his eyes from widening in shock.
What?
The lore speaker smirked.
You have a remarkable poker face, but I can still read you. We have a two-way connection now. I know what you're thinking. I've known since you landed here. All that nonsense about cosmic awareness. It was the stone all along. It can do so many things.
He spun around and snapped the scepter forward. A beam of energy shot forth and exploded against a wall.
See? It's made me smarter. It lets me see into your mind. It lets me control you.
I suspect it could also generate life itself, Thanos.
It's driven you mad, Thanos said.
Probably. But that's all right. Madness is no inhibitor to one with an infinity stone. I've always seen the world differently. A jumble of stories and myth, endlessly mashed together.
He shook his head, a troubled look on his face.
When you have so many narratives up here, he tapped his forehead. Sometimes it's tough to keep them in order. I perceive the world differently than you do. Since I have all of the stories in my head at once, I can relive them in any order. We live in a prism, not a line.
Thanos realized that he had precisely one weapon at his disposal. His own voice. The lore speaker, probably in a desperation born of his long, lonely exile, was allowing Thanos some modicum of thought. It wouldn't last. Thanos had to use it while he could. Stall. Distract. Until... something. Maybe. He'd been reduced to raw hope. Cha would have been both amused and pleased.
You will not best me, Thanos promised him.
Oh, but I already have, because in my time here, I have mastered myself. Conquer yourself first. The world will follow, I always say.
The universe is large and time is long, Thanos said. And you are ill-equipped for it, having been stuck here.
The universe doesn't frighten me. The universe is not infinite. It merely pretends to be so.
He reached out for the knife in Thanos' hand. Thought better of it, and said,
Cut your face, not too deep, just enough to draw blood.
With no command from his mind, Thanos' hand rose. He watched it come closer and closer, the bloody knife glimmering. Then the point of the blade caught the flesh just under his right eye and dragged down, carving a shallow, weeping furrow along his cheek. He shuddered involuntarily. Then again, everything he was doing was involuntary.
Now down your arm, the lore speaker ordered. Again, not too deep, I want you alive.
Thanos drew the blade down his arm, parting his flesh along the sharp edge. A stitch of fire raced along the path. Then, at the lore speaker's command, he dragged the blade across his chest, bisecting the wound already there.
Why torture me? Thanos asked. You can read my mind for anything you want to know.
I'm just making certain that my control is absolute. As I said before, I haven't been able to test it. I spent many centuries looking for a way to leave this place and work my mischief on the universe. I always believed it was possible, but I never made any progress until I started doing things, Thanos. We are the sum total of our decisions, not of our beliefs. That is the truth. And truth is a mistress harsher than death, as the universe will learn when I walk it as you.
It took an effort, but Thanos managed a weak chuckle. Anything else would have required more control over his throat and gut than he currently possessed.
I think you'll be surprised by the sort of welcome you receive from others with my face. I'm a bit famous.
Don't try to talk me out of this!
The lore speaker balled up a fist and punched Thanos in the nose. Thanos's nose wasn't broken, but it felt out of joint. Blood ran in twin streams down the lower half of his face.
Do not try to talk me out of this, the lore speaker growled, cradling his injured hand. I've been planning this for...
He tilted his head back, lips moving as he counted.
Well, for more centuries than I can count up to. Once I'm free of here, I'll use you to bring more and more people to me for the controlling. Soon enough, I will control entire populations, entire worlds, and eventually...
The Lord Speaker's breath came faster and faster as he spoke more and more excitedly, his eyes dancing.
Eventually, I will control the universe, Thanos. I will be in every living, thinking being in all of creation.
That will take just about forever,
Thanos said quietly.
Trust me. I've done the math.
He struggled with those words. The warm ocean around him was everywhere, and the wheel in his mind was spinning faster and faster. He was losing every last piece of who he was. In moments, he would cease to be.
I'm exceptionally long-lived, the lore speaker said mildly. I don't mind taking forever.
Then, with a chortle, he swung the scepter in a wide arc, then brought it to his lips and kissed it.
I'll finally understand it all, the entire universe. I'll combine all its disparate chapters and forms into one grand story where the only character is me.
Drowning in his own brain, his body alight with pain, Thanos reached out for something, anything, to cling to. Cinta's smile. No, only pain and loss there. His mother. She was gone, too, as was Gwynth and Cha. And then, his daughters.
The pathway between us is so powerful right now.
The lore speaker inhaled deeply, as though captivated by the scent of a fragrant bouquet.
You're thinking about those girls up on your ship. Oh, Thanos, Thanos! Oh, the horrible things you've done to them. Do you truly believe that is love? Poor Nebula. More machine than person now. You don't deserve those girls, or anything else for that matter. And now you're thinking about the atomic structure of genes, trying to block me from learning more about your daughters. Worried about them, are you?
Don't worry.
When you take me up to your ship, father, I will take good care of them. They will be mine, too.
Thanos pressed his lips together and let out a low, grinding moan that caused the lore speaker to tilt his head to one side.
And now, you're... Are you really in that much pain, Thanos? Stars above Titan, I'd have thought a powerful warlord such as yourself would be used to a little blood every now and again. I have to say I'm a bit disappointed.
You should get used to disappointment for the little time you have left to live,
Thanos managed to tell him, focusing mightily. The lore speaker threw back his head and cackled. It was a giggly, depraved laugh, one that knew no boundaries or morality.
I applaud you, Thanos, brave to the end. Tell me, why are you so confident?
Thanos enjoyed the fact that he could grin. His own blood dried now, cracked as his lips peeled back from his teeth and turned up.
Because I managed to stop thinking about my daughters.
What?
Said the lore speaker, right before Nebula shot him in the back with a blast from a Chitauri battlestaff. The lore speaker stumbled forward, barely able to keep his balance. He nearly collided with Thanos, but caught himself right before he did so.
It'll take more than that,
Thanos ordered the girls over the lore speaker's shoulder. The lore speaker opened his mouth, to order Thanos to kill the girls, no doubt. And Thanos could have, and would have, had he been so commanded. But there was panic in the lore speaker's eyes, pain in his mien, and he stumbled over his words as they fought to spill out of his mouth. Before he could manage a sentence, Gamora had cut off his head with a single, efficient stroke of her battle staff. Thanos would have watched the head fly off its neck and bounce on the floor, but the explosive gout of blood that erupted in his face blinded him, so he missed enjoying that sight. He heard the splat thud, though, when the head hit the floor. That was nice. A moment later, his limbs loosened and his body came back online.
The controlling pathway between his body and the Lore Speaker had been severed as neatly as the Lore Speaker's head. Thanos wiped blood from his eyes and beheld his daughters before him. His pair of demons. His perfect assassins.
"Well done, girls," he rumbled.
"Thanks, Dad,"
Nebula said in that tone of voice that indicated she was too disaffected to care, but cared nonetheless.
"Especially you, Gamora."
Nebula's jaw dropped.
"Why especially her?"
"Because she actually killed him."
Thanos pressed a hand to his chest wound, the worst of those inflicted on him. It was already clotting nicely.
"We'll be leaving now. Get that and bring it with us."
He gestured to the head, which had rolled into the kitchen and fetched up against the freezer. Nebula and Gamora raced to grab it. Nebula just barely edged out her sister, pouncing on the head and holding it up by the hair.
"What about this thing?"
Gamora asked, pointing to the scepter. It had landed close to the Lore Speaker's body.
"Don't touch it," Thanos ordered.
Gamora hesitated just an instant, then backed away. Lips pursed in concentration. Thanos crouched by the Infinity Stone. The blue stone glimmered. He half expected a shock when he touched the scepter, but he felt nothing more than smooth alloy. He picked it up in one hand. It seemed so small. It seemed infinitely large.
Said Nebula, still holding up the Lore Speaker's head.
Blood dripped out of the severed neck.
"Why are we taking this?"
"His brain was exceptional. I want to examine it to see if it can be of use. As for the rest of this place, we'll firebomb it from orbit."
He strode to the door, then paused, turning to look back at them.
"Why did you come for me?"
The girls exchanged a look that was subtle but unmistakably confused.
"You weren't in touch,"
Gamora began slowly.
"It was the longest we'd been without—"
She trailed off helplessly. His brainwashing, it seemed, was complete. Nebula jumped in, sneering.
"You always said that if we were concerned or worried, there's probably a reason, so—"
"Yes. I also taught you always to aim for the head. When we get back to Sanctuary, you'll be on restricted rations for a week, Nebula."
Chapter 44. Aboard Sanctuary, Thanos watched as two Infinity-class orbit-to-surface missiles etched a slow, glowing arc down to the Lore Speaker's enclave. The rotation of the moon meant that the missiles disappeared over the curvature of the orb, vanishing from view. An instant later, twin mushroom clouds blossomed from the other side of the moon, erupting up and out with such force that they were visible even from orbit. The moon shuddered, and an alarm klaxon went off on Sanctuary.
"Looks like we knocked that moon out of its orbit,"
Gamora said. From a spot across the bridge, where she lounged against the bulkhead, both arms crossed over her chest, Nebula said in a bored tone,
"Told you two missiles was overkill." "What do we do now?"
Gamora asked him. Thanos had no ready answer. He watched the nuclear fire spilling into space as the moon juddered and twitched out of its orbit. It would most likely be caught up in the nearest planet's gravity well, possibly colliding with it and driving that celestial body out of its own orbit. A cascading effect, no doubt. He did the math in his head, calculating orbital velocities, elliptical orbits, apogees, and perigees. If his rough reckoning was right, the worlds of the Kaldeem Soro would end up either pulverized or spinning into the remains of the nearby sun. Good enough.
"What do we do now?"
he said to Gamora, repeating her hanging question in his own grave voice.
"What I do best."
"Kill more people?"
"No. I'm going to think."
He left them on the bridge, alone, and retreated to his quarters. He spent most of the trip to civilized space, out of the Kaldeem Soro and back through the Raven's Sweep, in his quarters, thinking. plotting, planning. He placed the scepter that bore the Mind Stone in a bracket on the wall, and spent long hours staring at it, drinking it in. Its power throbbed, and seemed to melt the air around it. He yearned for it, and feared it in equal measure. That was as it should be, he knew. Utilizing an item of such power should not be undertaken lightly. The Infinity Stones weighed on his mind. He'd thought that a stone could solve his problem, but his experience in the Mind Stone's thrall had taught that for all the stones' power and despite their name, their power was still limited. As the people of Morag had learned, power alone was not enough. It had to be applied appropriately. The Mind Stone could make people agree with him, yes, but he would still need to travel from world to world. Perhaps if joined with the Space Stone, to shrink the distance between worlds. But he would still need to conquer each one. The Time Stone, then. Roll back the years, save those who'd already been lost. But it would only work locally. And so on. And then the solution occurred to him. It was so simple and so vastly complex at the same time that it wrenched from him the first genuine laughter he'd experienced in years. Emerging from his quarters just as Sanctuary emerged from the Raven's sweep, Thanos was met by a Nebula who looked leaner and angrier for her ration restriction. He allowed himself a slight grin of satisfaction. In addition to her food punishment, he'd also charged her with cleaning every pulso glass opening along the hull of the ship. When she'd complained, he told her that this had been his very first duty in space, and that he expected her to excel at it. The portholes gleamed. "We've emerged from the sweep one light month from Mystifere," she told him. "Prime opportunity for us. They're on the brink of environmental collapse. They'll listen, or we can take—"
"Maybe later,"
Thanos told her as they entered the bridge. Gamora, sitting in the command chair, leaped up.
"We're hunters now," he told them. "Seeking very specific prey."
"Who?"
asked his favorite.
"Not who, my dear Gamora. What? The Infinity Stones."
The girls stared at each other, then turned to him.
"Which one?"
"Not which one. We're going to get all of them. But no one must know that I am the one collecting them. The two of you will be my vanguard."
He sighed in contentment and reached out to stroke their hair.
"In a few short years, you will be the age I was when I was exiled from Titan. Unlike me, you will not have to founder and thrash about for purpose, for a cause. You are fortunate, my darlings, to be my daughters. We will gather our stones, and no one will realize I have them until it's too late."
Gamora said nothing. Nebula elbowed her sister, but when she could not prod anything out of her, finally spoke up herself.
"You want the two of us to traipse around the universe looking for a bunch of glowing pebbles? Do you have any idea how long that'll take?"
"I do. That's why you won't do it alone. You'll work through underlings, minions."
He stroked his jaw, thinking.
"We killed a platoon of the Xandarian Nova Corps. They will never look at us with anything but hate and death. But the Kree, for example, may be amenable. And there will be others."
He walked over to the foremost extreme of the bridge and stared out at the speckling of stars. The Raven's sweep was receding behind them. The past was receding behind them. Ahead lay the stones and the future and all its glorious possibilities. Time and soul and mind and reality and space and power. No single stone would achieve his goal, but all of them. With such power, he could wrest planets from the sky. And he heard a voice in his head. Chaz, or maybe it was Sintas. Already they were merging, his past rapidly fusing into a single block of memory that could not inhibit him.
"Don't get too far ahead of yourself,"
the voice said.
"Before you start pulling planets down, you have to find the other stones. And